This is the Tuesday, August 9th, 2016, initial kickoff meeting of the Municipal Fiber Feasibility Task Force meeting. I'm calling the meeting to order. Staff liaison Shane Boyle, the IT manager for the city. I'd like to go ahead and take roll call. Any callers on the conference bridge, please say your name for the record.
This is Anton Tatry.
Thank you.
Richard Sackalick.
Dean Sir.
Hazi Ahmed.
Brian Gilday.
Mike Taylor.
Amit Armstrong.
Great. So moving on to the next agenda item, we have no previous meeting minutes to approve. So we'll move into the appointed member and staff introductions. I'm going to save mine for last. Richard, would you like to go ahead and just kind of give us a brief kind of bio of what you think is important for us to know about what you bring to the table, either in business, technology, or other skills to help us in this process?
Sure. Let's see. I was born 65 years ago, and I'm 65.
Everything in between, no.
I spent probably 25 years in the sales and marketing of semiconductors with a company called NEC Electronics, and we did different kinds of custom chips for all different kinds of applications for Intel. I was an Intel account manager part of the time. So I've got a lot of experience with developing chips and all that kind of stuff. And in the early days of DSL, Intel was basically the leader of moving DSL forward and making the boards for ADSL and the original DSL boards. And I was fortunate enough to get some design-ins from my company for chips for those boards. So I got access to what was the beginning phase of DSL and how excited Intel was. And now we know how prolific DSL is and where it stands in the scheme of, you know, broadband stuff. So my background is I have a bachelor's in social work and a master's in vocational rehabilitation. And I worked in that field for about 10 years and before I went to electronics from 1984. Yeah, you know Intel, so. And I'm currently on the Economic Development Committee, looking at different aspects of West Lynn, and the fiber was particularly interesting to me, as was Mr. Kazi over there, because I think it would be a real good benefit. If the numbers can pan out, it'd be great. I mean, being a user of broadband, I would love 1 gigabit service all day long. So that's about it in a nutshell.
Sounds good. Dean?
Hi there, I'm Dean Sir. I'm not officially a member. I'm kind of in the test phase here to understand what the obligations are. But I'm an electrical engineer, also come out of the semiconductor business, Lattice Semiconductor, and those sorts of things. And I run a home business, nonprofit foundation, but I do all the technology work, so I'm a big consumer of bits in the city and that sort of thing. And just have a strong interest in this as a public utility and what that means to the city and its residents, kind of where that places us, where it puts us, and how that would fit in. So that's me.
Great. Kazi?
I'm Kazi Ahmed. My experiences has been from academic to professional. And in the academic world, after I graduated from Oregon State with my master's in computer science, the UN Dorians did.
No, the program I went to was a collaboration of OSU, PSU, and Oregon. Yeah.
So, and then I taught at Oregon State for a couple of years, and I moved to Portland working on a project with a public company, and I helped 5 different companies as startup, and 2 of them actually went public. And then I started in 2013, I think, or 2003, not 13. I did my MBA at Portland State, and I launched a new company of my own. And I'm still the founder, president, CEO, chairman of the board of that company. Have survived through all the different downturns in economy. Today I run this company from here and serve over 1,500, close to 1,500 clinics across the country. And we do it all from Tigard. We have our own data center and we have five carriers that connect, provide services to us. And so this is an area that I know a lot about and have worked for the last 20 years in that industry, or in, with that industry.
Sure.
So I thought it would be a good project for me to be involved and give. And then having built my own company and helped five other companies to grow, so this might come in very handy.
It's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian?
Brian Gilday. Nice to be here. I'm a resident of the Skyline Ridge neighborhood. And my background, so I was a naval officer. I got my bachelor's and master's degrees in computer science. And I was a consultant, Deloitte Consulting, for a long time. I was involved in lots of systems integration projects and all different types of technology and business type of projects. And then went on for the past 15 years or so as an entrepreneur. I've owned two businesses. Recently just was acquired, my most recent business, which I'm still a president of, AHA Consulting, and we design websites for municipalities. And so we have websites all over the country for cities, counties, school districts. I do not have specific knowledge in fiber, but I'm a technology guy. Mm-hmm. I understand RFP processes. I understand how to ask critical questions and evaluate vendors. I've been on both sides of that table, writing RFPs, responding to RFPs, and that whole process. And so I'm just happy to lend, without knowing specifics about the fiber networks and all of that. I'm just happy to offer another critical thinking voice to the team, since I was appointed before I realized I was appointed.
I mean, you know, there was an opportunity to back out.
I'm happy to be here.
But just to speak quickly to a couple points. We're not in the process of designing a fiber network. We're in the process of understanding if this community is over or underserved, and if a municipal fiber network makes financial sense. So you're right in the wheelhouse for what we need this group to help the help get the council the right information.
Okay.
Mike.
Okay, I've been in, I'm retired now, but I was in IT for 45 years. I started with IBM in 1967 as a programmer. Precision Cast Parts hired me as their IT director and spent some time there. Generally, my whole career has been in management up until I retired about 9 years ago. A couple of vignettes. I probably have seen a lot of RFPs and done a lot of negotiating. And for example, in 1980, my buddy and I saw the explosion on Mount St. Helens, and we developed a book, sold it to 100,000 copies to Thriftway in our part time. We thought we were going to package that ourselves when it was two semis worth of books. But and then when the mad cow disease came up in 2003-2004, myself and another individual designed a tracking system that the states didn't buy, but they used it for tracking hospital equipment. So all the algorithms that go with that kind of stuff. I guess the I put a fiber system in 2001, and I got involved in cellular wireless technology in 99, and installed that, a huge system, and ended up going all over the world talking about it for about 4 or 5 years. In 2005, I was inducted into the IT Hall of Fame by Computer World down in Scottsdale, Arizona. So I guess my claim to this group would be strategic thinking and sort of anticipating what can go wrong, because anything can go wrong, and we always need a way out so we don't burden the city with any kind of bad decision that comes across. So that's sort of my perspective. So I did consulting up until about 4 years ago, and I'm done.
Well, not quite.
You're consulting. That's off your expertise.
Yeah, actually, I'm pushing the Measure 97 which was actually my idea back 3.5 years ago, the 2.5% on corporate tax. And when I was an officer with the League of Women Voters. And I will tell you that while Oregon has the lowest corporate tax rate, New York has the second highest corporate tax rate. Things are cheaper at Costco in New York City than they are in Wilsonville.
Interesting.
So believe that your cost of goods are going to go up here. They aren't, but anyway. Interesting.
Certain.
So, hi, I'm Amit Armstrong. I work for Federal Highway Administration. I manage the Innovation and Technology Deployment Program. What that means is what the research that comes out, I test for marketability and making sure it's deployable. I have a PhD in civil engineering, and I'm the UAB liaison to this task force. So.
Excellent. I'm glad to have you aboard.
Thank you.
All right, on the conference bridge, Anthony, would you please give us a brief bio, if you would?
All right, good evening, everyone. I'm Anandan Tandri. I work for Metro Graphics here in Wilsonville. I am the CIO and a VP here. Mentor is in the electronic and semiconductor business. We develop software and hardware for electronic industry. And I've been with the company now 10 years, and I'm living in West Lynn now 10 years. I moved from the Bay Area. I used to work for Oracle, and then before that I used to work for Cadence Design Systems, which is Mentor's competitor, for a very long time. So I've been in the IT industry now for close to 29 years, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have your expertise on this task force. It sounds like we've got a ton of capability in this room, and that's really exciting for me because it just means that we're going to be very successful at what we do. So to give you guys a little insight into me, Shane Boyle, the IT manager for the city. I've only been with the city about 4 years. Prior to that, I had about a 15-year career in IT and private sector. Worked mostly for small and medium-sized companies. My education background, I got my undergrad in physics with computer science minor. Went on and got my MBA from the Oregon Executive Program downtown Portland a few years back. And made the switch into government space to basically for a career change in IT. You know, I'd done a lot of good things in private sector for small companies and thought I could come to public sector and really just bring my service personality and bigger thinking to government when it comes to IT projects and delivering value solutions. So that's a little bit about me and kind of where I come from. And I have some experience in the fiber realm. I'm in the process of getting most of our city buildings wired on the Clackamas County dark fiber ring. So I wouldn't consider myself an expert in fiber, but I'm certainly not wet behind the ears. So.
Shane.
Yes, sir. Okay, no problem. For the record, Kazi is going to have to leave. He does have a prior civic commitment, and anything he has for the record, we will, I'll have him send it over, and we'll include it with the task force in the meeting notes.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you aboard.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Have fun.
Okay, moving into the next item, the operating agreement. It's a one-page document that I put together to kind of outline the goals, objectives, and kind of how I would like this group to approach this project. I hope you've all had a chance to at least look it over. Does anybody see any issues or any concerns with the operating agreement? And can we all agree to do our best to operate within the parameters of challenging one another, but respectfully, and do our best to produce results that give our city council the best chance for success in making a decision on this.
Absolutely.
Okay. If everybody feels comfortable about that, then we'll move to the next item.
Well, I got one question.
Sure, go for it.
Not related on evaluation of the proposals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the vendor that we're going to pick, and maybe we're looking at this too quickly, their sources of the study, the data that they're going to provide, is obviously from other agencies, from other companies, what have you. Is there any guidance on how they're going to determine the need in the city?
So that's probably a good segue to our next topic. We'll make that the first question I answer on that. I just want to check real quick. Everybody's okay with the operating agreement and the objectives? Were there any questions around that, specifically objectives or roles and responsibilities?
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. I guess what was not completely clear to me, and I didn't, you know, moving through this pretty quick, but it seems to me that the focus here is on getting a vendor to do the evaluation and the study. And is that the scope of the task force so far, and then it gets recharged by the city council for if the council decides to proceed?
Okay. That also fits our next agenda point, so why don't we'll hit yours first, Mike, and then we'll hit yours next, Dean.
Okay.
So we're going to roll into the next agenda item, and that's review of the RFP and the scope of work. There's I'm going to answer Mike and Dean's questions first, and then we'll kind of roll into the RFP here and kind of go through some of the important points. So Mike, part of the RFP is to, I left it defined but kind of open, that the vendor who comes in is going to have to survey the residential community and the business community in some way to determine whether or not there's an appetite for this kind of service in the city.
Right.
I left it fairly flexible on how they want to deliver that capability. You know, that could be focus groups, they could do surveys. I wanted the experts to be able to speak to how they were going to approach that, because that's part of our grading system. We may find one company's approach to be poor in gathering that information, but we may find another company's approach to be much richer in value. So I can specifically point out that item in the RFP where we ask them to tell us how they're going to collect that's our specific city information, and not extrapolate from some other city's data.
Right. Well, does this group, and I'll just throw this open to everyone here, do you think we ought to mandate or give some parameters before the RFP responses as to some of the methodologies that could be used? I mean, if they come up with, hey, we're not going to take any of these, and we've got this great methodology that's worked 8 times, and nobody sitting in this room has ever heard of it, but should we check it out and it works? I guess my concern is that we get the best feedback from the West Lynn community as possible. Okay?
Sure.
And I'll tell you right now, I don't think bringing in 7 people from here and 6 people from there, a total of 13 people out of 25,000 or 10,000 living units, is a statistically sound way to do it. I mean, that's my opinion.
So I have seen the results of some of these studies that other municipalities have shared with me.
Yeah.
And some of those have the actual boots on the ground survey type mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen, people out there coming to deliver services and then what we're asking for, they do a lot of boots on the ground type interviewing process, stuff that passes statistical muster. Proper, cross-sampling and those kinds of things. So
yeah.
I'm not too concerned about the vendor's approach not meeting our criteria there. I think what we're going to find is we're going to have plenty of people who want to win the business, and they're going to come in and show us the best front on that. Now, if we decide that the RFP, none of them meet our criteria, we're not happy with any of them, we can always adjust the RFP and republish. So we always have that ability to do that. So don't feel like, if we don't get a good cross section of responses that we feel, meet a certain quality level, we can always rebid this out again, adjust the RFP and rebid it out.
If you look at the numbers, I think your bogey is $18,000, isn't it?
Somewhere between 18 and 25, I think,
right,
is kind of what I'm estimating.
If I put boots on the ground, which probably is the statistically most sound approach, that's the price it would be, obviously, go up, because you're paying interviewers to do a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So should we be a little flexible in that respect, or should we say, let's consider if it's a high bid, and they do put boots on the ground because it's more expensive. I'm trying to bring this up now so we don't, it may be too early, but I'd rather bring it up rather than too late, mm-hmm. because we could adjust the RFP.
Does the RFP list 18,000 to 25,000?
No.
Where did that number come from?
So that's just an estimate. I think I might have used that number in a public council meeting, giving an estimated range of where I think
okay.
the RFP should cost us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's the cost is one of four
components. And
right?
we need to find.
And the RFP doesn't stipulate a high end.
No.
So I would think we always have the option of.
Absolutely. So
do we have a constraint on, like, let's say we find one that's going to put something together that we feel is the best interviewing process, but it's going to be 27,000. Do you have flexibility? Is there flexibility in the number that we can spend for the right choice?
There's always flexibility, but the trade-off is what do we not do with the city in order to fund that more aggressively? So. Mm-hmm. But that's what that means. You know, it could come out of the IT budget, it could come out of the finance budget, it could come out of a different budget. So I guess I just want to be aware that if we do need to go back and request more funds to do this, there will be a trade-off somewhere else.
Okay.
You know, we have to have a balanced budget. And I'm prepared to advocate for that. If you guys feel that the right person or the right fit to do this costs more than we need to do that. Again, I don't mind advocating.
I think your point's really well taken, because
if
we spend an extra 10, to do this 90% confident that it's going to work versus, you know, spend a little bit less and we're not so sure. I mean, it's money well spent. So, you know,
right. And, you know,
it's a good decision for, I mean, we all have a lot of expertise in what would make sense. So it's,
I mean, I think we always,
as long as there's flexibility.
You know. I think we all can agree that, you know, you measure twice and cut once, right? We don't want to have to redo this study again because we chose the wrong vendor, right? We don't want to spend the money twice.
So I think you know, one takeaway from what you're saying is that we want a high quality study, but I hear you kind of probing for we don't want the lowest cost bidder. We're not, you know, absolutely driven by cost.
Right. No, I agree with you. We're not looking at the lowest bidder.
Right.
I'm sure.
Right. No, we do not have to take the lowest bidder.
Right.
My purchasing rules and technology don't require us to take the lowest bidder.
Right.
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 Okay.
Because we have a grading criteria, we very easily have the justification to show why we picked.
So the flip side of that is,
I assume that dollar amount that you came up with is based on you probing other cities and what they've spent.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So you have a sense for where it should come in.
So the flip side of that question, though, is are we, in how this is worded and what these vendors are used to seeing in an RFP, are we encouraging them to do a big enough study? Or someone going to come in here and say, I can do it for $12,000 and I, you know, so on and so forth, when they really could do a more comprehensive study.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've submitted an RFP, it doesn't look as strong compared to others because they were being overly aggressive on cost.
Yeah.
So are we being forthright enough to say, you know, the wording is great here, but I don't know what this means to a vendor in terms of a comprehensive feasibility study. Mm-hmm. Is that...
Yeah.
Too broad or not broad enough?
How about this? This is a pretty good topic for discussion. Let's work through some of the RFP. Maybe some of those questions you're asking will become more apparent. Let's dig into it a little bit.
I think when we get to 141,
it'll
be apparent. We need to, in my view,
well,
adjust a little bit.
Well, so here's the reality. Yes, sir.
I just got a quick question.
Sure.
Hearing all other members' comments. When I've gone through the evaluation criteria, where have you mentioned that the methodology they're going to use is evaluated? I see there is an organization qualification, there is a project management approach, but is it part of the project management approach? I think the question is, how do we know that they're using a sound methodology to come up with whatever they are coming up with as a recommendation? How are you evaluating that as part of their response?
So I believe you are correct in that the project management approach they use in this industry, there are mature players in this industry that do this on a regular basis. And I think we're going to see in the approaches some commonality in how they're conducted. And honestly, it comes down to us making the decision on what we think this community, the best way for us to, for these vendors to reach this community to do this study. So do I have a boilerplate that we can point to and say, this is a known methodology? I do not have that sitting in my hand right now at this point. I think we need to get the materials collected in. And if you guys feel that there's more research we need to do as part of analyzing the RFPs, we can go out and do some looking for that. You know what I mean? See if we can pull together more data on that. But again,
I'm not asking for boilerplate. I think, you know, my take on this is if you tell them what they should do and how they should do, then you probably may get a similar response from everyone. But if you leave it to them and how they come up with, you may be surprised with something they're going to show, which we probably have never thought about it. So I think leave it open for their creativity will be a good thing as far as I'm not, in my opinion.
Right, let the experts be experts, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's what weeds the chaff from the whatever.
Yeah.
So, as to how they approach it and what they share.
Do you know which community in our metro area have done something like this?
So the city of Sandy is, a lot of people like to point to the city of Sandy as a city that successfully implemented the municipal fiber network successfully. Supposedly, it's one of the most profitable funds that they have, and it's on a course of, you know, almost 100% installation in the city. So the city of Sandy is a place we can go look for a gleaming, you know, proof that it can be done successfully. Now, West Lynn is not Sandy. Sandy is a very different community than West Lynn. One of the reasons Sandy decided to build their own was because they asked, and I should say begged, Comcast, CenturyLink, the big boys, to supply more internet services to their community, and they said, just, you know, it's not cost effective. But then as soon as they decided to build their own, those players, you know, concerned about losing opportunity, started building into that city. So you know, it's a very different city than we are, and we may be served well enough by the service providers we have. We don't know that. Part of the study is to understand, do we have enough providers in the city providing high enough, you know, broadband products that adding another player to the market, i.e., you know, the city, doesn't make financial sense?
Right. So I guess so. The key issue that I'm trying to figure out. So there's technology available. They build that everywhere. So that's not a question of evaluation. The question of evaluation is it financially feasible for city to operate, whether as an owner or as a licensee through a third party, right? So for us, the key issue will be, can we see somewhere where the financial picture is clear, where somebody is operating it? So if we can get to look at someplace like Sandy, which is different city than West Lynn, but we can look at the financials.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So that is something that then we have a proof. It's not somebody just a study that they did it and they say, yeah, it will work. Because essentially we're asking them to give us a business plan.
Exactly.
Yeah. So right. So there will be all sorts of caveats that will be inserted in there. This happens and that happens. So
are you guys aware that the city of Hillsborough commissioned a very, very similar study about 6 to 9 months ago?
No, I'm not.
And the vendor actually came back and said, no, you should not do this. So the city of Hillsborough, you know, had done the same thing we did, and the vendor came back and said, no, it doesn't make financial sense for you to do it. So that gives me confidence that, you know, if we hire the right organization, they're not going to come in and just tell us yes for the sake of they want to sell us services.
Well, the contract is to do the feasibility study. It doesn't include implementation.
Right.
So in theory, there's no, you know, they don't have something invested in upselling us.
Right. So one of the things I did to help preload the system was that I went out and sought experts in this industry who just do feasibility studies, not the other side as well, and sell product. Now, there are people on our vendor list who downloaded the RFP who do sell the actual implementations. They do both pieces. So we're going to have between hopefully 5 and 7 responses from companies that do not actually sell the products or the implementation of such a study. So we know that we'll have some players in the game that have no dog in the fight to whether or not we do a yes or a no go forward decision on it, which to me is important.
So where did this idea actually came from? Is the idea of, you know, we need to even do this study to figure out whether we need a municipal network or not? The idea came from citizens complaining about the current providers, or how did this whole idea come up from? Is it because of Sandy?
I think there are some roots in that. City Councilor Thomas Frank, has spent a lot of time researching this and getting educated about this topic. I think what kind of brought it to forefront for him was frustration around the poor service quality of Comcast service. And I think in his neighborhood, he has a kind of a dark horse provider, FiberSpear. So when his addition was built, FiberSpear brought gigabit fiber to each of the houses in the subdivision. Now, I don't know if he knew this or not, but the backhaul services, or the services from where the subdivision ends back to, you know, the internet, are provided by Comcast to FiberSpear. So
it stops. So it slows down.
Well, maybe one way or another, he's still on the Comcast network at this point. But so having gigabit service at home is probably what kind of planted the seed. And then he's been, you know, going to different events and researching this, and he brought it forward as a council goal. It's something that you know, he wanted the council to look at. So that's kind of the root of it. I don't know a whole lot more about the root. I hope that's
that's accurate.
Enough.
That's accurate.
Well, part of it also is the Economic Development Committee that we're working on has looked into the potential, since 47% of businesses in West Lynn, at least that's the number that I've seen from the different surveys that were done, are home-based businesses, and of course home-based businesses will benefit greatly by 1 gigabit service. And then moving into the future, which the goal is to get more, potentially more home-based businesses, and not necessarily develop West Lynn so much, but to get economic improvement from it. And so we all thought that, you know, looking into gigabit, you know, run by the city would be ideal if it would pan out, of course.
Sure.
So I think that was some additional input that we gave to the city council.
Quick question. What did the Hillsborough study cost?
So I'd have to go back and look at my notes. That's one of the items I used to extrapolate what our cost should be. I want to say it was in the 40,000 range, I think. But then they're also a city much larger than us. Their population is, I think, 2 to 3 times what we are.
More, over 100,000.
Yeah. Is it entirely different mix of ten or clientele?
Right.
Yeah. So well, two
I'm
questions.
Just, real quick. I'm just dividing to say take 25,000, and let's just say the consultants are going to do $125 an hour. That's 200 hours.
Well, so I mean, we've asked them for a fixed bid proposal.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
there will be cost containment on this.
We're not getting a lot of time.
Well.
But in a sense, and this begs the question or the comment I was going to make, there's a certain portion of this that I think should be boilerplate for them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
The back-end business side of it, obviously you have to know what's local and that kind of thing. But understanding the community, I think, is what is unique.
It's expensive.
Both and expensive, but both the consumers as well as how the city works and the finances and that.
Yes.
So they don't really have to reinvent the whole wheel for this. But they should have I would presume they have some sort of a general methodology that might vary by consultant as to how they would understand that community, but they've done this before.
Well, if you're looking for community input, let's assume that the boilerplate is free, okay? And all they're doing is community outreach and understanding the community. We're only gonna spend 200 hours doing both of those.
Well, but
$125 an hour.
I haven't seen any of these surveys, so I don't know what it looks like, but I would presume that the $125 an hour guy is hiring far less expensive people to actually go out on the street and or do an internet-based survey. And so,
yes.
So there's a lot of leverage in that.
Yes.
So, it's two things. One, I want to go back to just a brief technical comment. I frankly don't care if I have gigabit at my doorstep. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll take a half or even a quarter of that if my latency goes down. So it's latency that bugs me more than gigabit, because I don't think we generally consume enough data for that to be an issue. But we can talk about the mechanics of that. But it seems to me, and this has come up a couple of times, that it would be valuable for us to, at one of these upcoming meetings, to spend a half hour, an hour maybe, with somebody from Sandy to just kind of have that conversation back and forth. They've done this for a number of years. You know, what was their experience? What were the issues that they've run across? You know, running a fiber system is different than running a water system, than running a whatever else system. And so what does that mean, and what have they been surprised by, so that we can provide that experience also into how we judge these proposals, and not so much the vendors, but probably the final proposals that come in.
So something like that is probably easy to do. I know both Joe and Jeremy over there and Sandy, I've conversed with them at great length on this topic.
Who are they?
I'm sorry, Jeremy. Jeremy is, I think he's a, shoot, I knew you could ask me that. He was instrumental in getting it done in SandyNet, and Joe is the guy who currently runs it for the city.
Okay.
Runs so, the actual.
So a business guy and an IT guy.
They're both IT guys, but they're both heavily involved in the business side of it. So the question is that something that we need to have before we rate the RFPs? That I'm not so sure that we need that. I think it would be helpful to have their input or have that education, you know, sometime between, you know, when the RFPs come in and maybe when we're interviewing,
right,
or during the actual, if that makes sense to you guys. Or do you think it's, I mean, what's the feel of the room? Do we want to have those folks?
Well, if we can go back and add questions to the guys, to the RFP people, then I don't think it matters when, but it would be valuable to find out from them what their pitfalls were, what came easy, you
sure.
know, all
sure.
that general stuff. Yeah. If we needed it before they actually responded, so they would have some time to change some of the
So any changes we make to the RFP, we republish out, we got to republish out to everybody.
Right.
And if we don't leave enough time for them to actually respond or change their responses, then they can protest our decision.
So we would have time, let's say, after the RFPs come in, if we decide through mm-hmm. having speaking yeah. with them, and these RFP responses haven't approached some of the things that Sandy said, yeah, yeah, that we had a problem
sure.
with this, or this was, we can go back and say to all of them, and then give them whatever deadline makes sense and redo it if necessary. I mean, preferably not, of course, but.
And the
yes,
flip
sir.
Side of that, I think,
Hello.
Is.
Could
go ahead on the phone.
On the speakerphone?
Sorry to interrupt. I was thinking that if this proposal, the RFP, is specifically to just study, I think the Sandy input is required before the city makes the decision whether we even want to go ahead to do this the municipal fiber or not, right? So that is another input to be considered, absolutely, along with whatever this consultant is going to tell us. And plus whatever other things we need to look at it to say whether we want to do the municipal fiber or to go to the next step or not, right? So these guys basically, I'm assuming, is just going to do and tell us whether it makes sense for us to even think about it.
You are correct in that statement about what the RFP is going to do for us. I want to certainly make sure you guys have enough education to feel like, you know, in the evaluation process, you guys feel like you're positioned well to be you know, weighing in. You know, so if we want to do something beforehand, I'm certainly fine trying to set that up. But he does raise a good point that we're not solution building right now. What we're doing is we're trying to determine, is there a financial business case for it.
Can we walk through the scope and the timeline?
Absolutely.
So that we understand
yeah.
that as a
yeah.
group.
But we, just to finish on that, what we don't want to do though is miss something in this survey and understanding of the community, so that, you know, as you said, we have
yeah.
to have kind of a do-over or a half do-over come January, February, because we didn't get what might be fairly easy information or perspective from somebody that's already done this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if only we'd asked our citizens to dump the dump or our business mm-hmm. is this, then we would have had higher degree of confidence or lack of confidence, as the case may be. So I think the experience of others is important here.
So I'm taking minutes on this, and that's an action item for us to make a decision on when we want to have those conversations, or try to have those conversations, or bring people in. So we can revisit these action items at the end of the meeting to make sure we've got the right go-forwards, okay?
Okay, and again, just as we're going to jump through the RFP, but I want to question just at the front end, is fiber the right word? I mean, I know what fiber is, and fiber drives everything, but ultimately, is that restrictive or unrestrictive? You know, what if Wi-Fi is the right answer? You're still going to run fiber to Wi-Fi. Does that fall within this scope and this verbiage?
So the term FTTP or FTTH, fiber to the premise, fiber to the home, mm-hmm. is a coined term dedicated to physical cabling infrastructure, not Wi-Fi, not a Wi-Fi infrastructure. So this is going to be focused directly on a install fiber optic cable to the home and all of the backhaul infrastructure to do that. So there is no consideration on Wi-Fi. Now, if these vendors, you know, propose that, or whoever we hire to do this study, come back and say, well, you know, it doesn't make sense to do a fiber network, but maybe a Wi-Fi network, that they could do that. We don't, but it's not being called out or asked for in the scope of work. That may be something they recommend for further study, but it's not active, not
so,
actively.
So we're calling it municipal network.
What was that?
I'm just saying, how about calling it as municipal network, so don't call it fiber or Wi-Fi or whatever. Network is a very generic term.
Sure. I think our, you know, the actual council goal that's driving this references fiber optic cable to the home. So I'm trying to operate within the guidelines of the council goal as best as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
My guess is that's more from naivety than...
Yeah,
could be.
I don't think they thought about. Well, it could be Wi. You know,
sure.
It could be Wi-Fi. You know, there's.
Yeah, we all think fiber is the fastest. You know, most reliable, all that sort of thing. And yeah, and who
could
knows
be the most expensive
is.
To implement versus yeah. Wi-Fi at half the speed could be.
What's you know. Coming now is your point to point, and it's sort of bastardized because, and I've investigated some of that. They're up and it's being tested in Boston right now. But you would have instead of a cell tower, you'd have local. Fiber connections and X amount of homes would wirelessly connect into that, and that would give you the high speed as well. So it's sort of a
hybrid,
halfway there, hybrid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay, well,
let's go through the as you suggested
good.
Here. When you get to 141, I'm going to suggest
one other small comment just on the operating agreement. I think you should use FTTP in a couple of times, you never state what it is.
Oh, okay.
So I would just add that in that statement of purpose, the municipal fiber to the premise. When I first read this, I didn't know what FTTP was.
Gotcha.
I saw it. You do say what that means in the RFP. Whatever the RFP is.
Yeah.
So this is what the public will look at is the one pager. So.
Yeah, I'm posting this with our agenda, so mm-hmm. it's open to the public to view. So.
Isn't it just the next generation of HTTP?
Hypertext. real quick on bullet point 1.3, just kind of outlining the bidder's roles and qualifications. want to make sure that the vendors that are coming to the table have actual experience, you know, 5 years in business and have already completed these studies on at least populations of 15,000 or more. I think, you know, that kind of helps keep the trunk slammer, if you guys know what that term means, from coming in and, you know, pitching a, you know, a $5,000 study that's going to tell us everything. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, tell us everything about the company.
And again, not to be a nitpicker, and I know we can't change this because the RFP is out, but I was uncomfortable with late proposals will be retained but not considered for award. Mm-hmm. That slams the door on us and does not give us the flexibility to accept a late proposal. Mm-hmm. So
agreed.
In the future, my suggestion would be may not be considered for award. So we don't have to consider it, but
well, I think per statute.
I think per state statute, if someone submits a lot of government
okay.
RFPs.
Fair.
They're pretty much required.
So about
I'm not a government guy.
about half of this document is legal requirements.
Right. Right.
So the second half of the document contains most of the
right.
stuff that we're not too concerned about.
Yeah.
Right. I work for federal government. Our RFP twice as thick.
Yeah.
Okay. 141, required research.
I got a suggestion on the second bullet.
Okay.
Can we read the first one first? Because
sure.
I have a question on that one.
Okay, go ahead.
You're one bullet ahead of me. So just conduct a review of the current incumbent providers.
Mm-hmm.
So What are examples of an incumbent provider?
Comcast, CenturyLink.
Comcast. Okay, and then what's, then in the second to last bullet, you have conduct an analysis of potential partners. What's the difference between an incumbent provider and a partner?
So Clackamas County offers fiber services. They might be a partner that.
Okay.
A Comcast could borrow, lease, or rent fiber services from.
Google.
Google.
Yeah.
And couldn't, I read that also to include Comcast so that we would have a business partnership with them as opposed to our own physical system.
Right.
Yeah, so the idea being is that, you know, so Wave Broadband, I don't know if you guys know this or not, they're not really an incumbent in the market here, but we have a franchise agreement with them to allow them to run backhaul services for cell towers in town. So Wave Broadband is a company that doesn't provide internet services to the home, but they do provide backhaul services back to the Pittick Mansion and you know, kind of getting on the, you know, the big show. Well, they could be, if they've got fiber already laid in certain areas, then it may make sense to lease some of their lines instead of trenching and digging our own lines in. So that would be a scenario where we might leverage an existing, you know, because they're not really a provider, but they may have stuff in the ground that could be leveraged.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're finished with number bullet point number one, right?
So one.
I'm good.
So 141. Does that all seem reasonable? Does anybody have any questions on any of those?
Yeah.
Second bullet.
On the second bullet point, there.
Create a competitive pricing model.
I was going to suggest we add after the word conduct a statistically sound survey of business residences. I don't want just a survey. I want something that you can hang your hat on. So
would it be safe to say, since we're not here to rewrite the RFP, we're really starting to talk about, as part of our evaluation criteria for their responses to this bullet, is the method that they...
I think everybody wants a good survey.
Right.
You know, I mean, we can't wait till we're evaluating and say, gee, I wish they'd done a better survey. We didn't tell them to do a better survey. A statistically sound survey.
Right.
No, yeah. I'm just saying, right. I'm looking back.
But when they get the responses, I like that, because that just tells me, so if we're, as part of the evaluation criteria for that bullet,
yeah.
When they tell us how they're going to do it, that's what we're really
looking at. Yeah. No, you're right.
Well, I would think the companies that are pretty sharp, that know how to do this, they will provide a statistically... I mean,
that's
if they're good providers and they really know their shit, they're going to say, you know, you're not going to just get any survey. This is going to be statistically significant or whatever the term is. And that'll be part of the process, like Brian said, of weeding out the guys that we think maybe have done a better job than others. And so I think they're going to show us pretty clearly, probably. Some of them are going to look at it and go, did they even bother to look at this? You know, like a lot of responses to things, and others are going to go, wow, they really went in depth, you know, and then we can go for questions from there. So
I took that note down as something for our grading criteria, statistically sound, survey. Thank you.
So are we going to vote on including that or what?
Well, we can't change the RFP, that's what he's saying,
right?
Because it's already published.
Oh, you sent it out already?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's been out for... The responses are coming in, that's maybe part of the timeline, next week.
In a week, 11 days.
The 19th, yeah. Okay. So if I make any changes to this, I have to let everybody know. I can certainly do that from the BIDS website that we do.
Oh, you could submit an addendum.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I can post an addendum, but the more changes we make, the more bidders may not make the deadline of the 19th.
Let's see how many changes we make.
Yeah. Or suggestions we put, yeah.
Could one of those changes also push everything out a week or 2 weeks?
It throws the whole timeline off if we do that. It cuts down the amount of time they have to actually produce results for us.
Well, I'll go to the council and say we're going to be a month late.
Right. Well,
if to do a good job, just like you'll go find some money. I mean, that's how we need to do it.
I like the idea of seeing what the potential.
Let's see what the other issues are. Yeah.
Because then we can decide. Do we think that's going to fundamentally alter the responses we're going to get? And if we don't, then we'll just deal with that during the evaluation and interview process.
Because there's nothing to stop us to get their first pass, so to speak, and from coming back and going to the council and say, we need to ask some more questions. It's going to be another 2 weeks to get it out, another 3 weeks to get it back. And so
my experience in submitting dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of responses to RFPs from cities, mm-hmm. is that, no offense to Shane in this particular RFP, but the cities create these RFPs, the real selection occurs not due to even the paper that's submitted, it's the interview process,
right.
and really evaluating the experience level and understanding, because these organizations know what we need more than we do, probably. So I think that's where we're really going to provide value as a team, mm-hmm. is during that interview process, to really ask the critical questions like you just asked about statistically sound. Yeah. That's where we're going to be able to, I think, make our...
Let me just make a statement or point for us to consider later, is that we may want to interview more respondents rather than less. Because if we're going to get the most value in that process, just a consideration, because I don't have any number in mind of people we want to interview. That's kind of up to this group to decide how many folks do we want to interview. Is it the top six, top eight, top two? So.
Yeah, usually when you are ranking against the evaluation criteria, there's definite tiers emerge. So we definitely want to interview all the first-year candidates.
Yeah, for certain.
Yeah,
I agree.
Okay. In that 1.41, are there any more questions or concerns about the criteria in there?
Yeah, what is an engineering analysis? When I read these, mm-hmm. I don't understand what these things mean. I'm assuming these vendors do more than I do, like an engineering analysis, or what goes into evaluating the current community development code. Things like that.
I
don't even know that it's important that I mm-hmm. right now know what all those things mean. Again, I think that'll come out when I read the responses, because those should tell me all those things. But when I look at the timeline, mm-hmm. this feels to me like a lot of work.
Yeah.
For right. a very, very short period of time, even not even including what the actual cost of it is. And so that's just my sort of gut, not really understanding all of this in terms of timelines. But maybe when you look at the Hillsborough project, it took 3 months, and bam, and then we're basing it off of.
So this timeline actually is a little longer than the Hillsborough timeline. Mm-hmm. I gave additional time,
okay,
in and above what I received back in information on the Hillsborough thing.
So give you an example, right? For if I ask you to design a bridge, right? It's like a totally, this mind-boggling task, right? But for a bridge designer, all they need is they have a standard set of calculation and spreadsheet and a program.
Sure.
They plug in the new numbers or the new site, and it spits out a result.
Right.
So they will have the same thing. They will have like a template that they have been using it if they have an experience. And they can spit it out pretty quickly.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, this is a feasibility assessment.
Yeah.
It's not actually the implementation. So it's not like they're doing a contract says we know exactly how many feet of asphalt we have to tear up.
Right. When I read terms like engineering analysis,
right.
I was like, well, what does that mean? Or it just seemed like, well, that sounds like a lot.
So an engineering analysis in this context more than likely means how many miles of underground fiber, how many miles of aerial fiber, where, you know, those kinds of things are going to come into play in the engineering side of things.
Okay.
Where are we going to, you know, where does backhaul go? Backhaul is literally the big trunk line that all the little lines come into. Right. So, you know, they're going to look at the community and they're going to say, oh, well, we can't put fiber in any of our parks because the city of Westland's charter says we can't do anything to the parks without it going to vote. You know, November vote. So they're good. Part of that engineering study is to know, okay, well, we can't build anything in the parks. We can't cut through parks. We can't do anything in the parks. So all of our fiber is going to have to go around. Just one example of kind of the engineering aspect of this.
Okay. I was looking, you reference a goal here, and I don't see something that says this is the goal of this project. This is the goal. I can see background information. I can see description. Is that the same as a goal?
Well, delivered results are the effective. What we expect to come out of this feasibility study.
I think we're kidding ourselves when we took a thorough business plan, potential options. Either this is all boilerplate and we could have gotten the city of Hillsborough's copy and saved some money, but you talk about doing an engineering study. If you've got underground utilities, I'll tell you, I was city council at Mountain Park, or at Lake Oswego, and they're looking at this as well. And Mountain Park's got 2,500 living units, and it's all underground, and they've got their own cable system. You can just fish line that baby through.
Sure.
The installation on it is minuscule. You get down into some of these other places where you're, you know, you're on telephone poles, and that's a big cost versus using existing conduit. So they're going to, in the time frame we're talking about for 20 grand, is there a number they call, like at engineering, and they say, you know, we have 2,000 households that have underground and 8,000 households that don't. Is that available right now?
Well,
I mean, that's the study.
So
that's going to impact the cost, the revenue.
It will. We have published online maps, GIS maps. It's easy to get statistics from the government on how many households are here.
Right.
You know, the county publishes a certain amount.
How many that are served by underground utilities?
I would have to assume so, because our mapping tools, that publicly accessible mapping tools, provide a lot of information about the city in general. Again, this is not going to be an implementation plan. This is going to be.
I know, but you're asking your word thorough business plan, showing likely revenues and expenses.
Sure.
If they know what to determine their expenses, they're going to know what their installation is going to be.
It's not going to be perfect, Mike. It's going to be a.
If they get within 300%, we'll be lucky, based on.
I don't know if I agree with that until I see material back from them.
Well. You know, we're only going to be out 20, 25 grand, but I just don't see all this stuff coming together in the time frame and for the dollars we're talking about for a good study. I guess I would, I'd rather, get a better study for more money if that's what it's going to take.
Well, so to answer your question, right, you have to look at it as a phased approach. The first phase is even feasible to do all that study. So let's say you raised a question about a statistical significance survey, right? To do a community of $20,000-$25,000 cut across economic lines, all the other demographic feature, it will cost you more than $20,000 just to do a survey.
That's right.
Right? Okay. So what we are trying to do here is we are trying to take a very first cut that it is even in the ballpark for the city of Westland to take this step or not. And if says it is in the ballpark, then we go with the next phase, what that takes to actually really do the analysis, the economic analysis.
So before you spend $250,000,
right,
spend $25,000.
Yep.
To even get a sense of it, exploring further.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
is that what you see?
What I see.
I don't think you see that.
What I see coming back from this is an analysis of City of Westland saying the city has enough providers, people are happy enough with their service quality. If the city was to go out and spend $50 million to build a fiber optic network, they might get a 50% take rate or 40% take rate, and you might be able to operate it at break even for the next 5 years. That's kind of what I'm looking to come out of this. Or they're going to say, you know, service is so poor that 25% of your population can't get high speed internet. You know, that to me, that's surprising. Any place in the Portland metro area that can't get high speed internet, you know, we're a very technical. So, you know, if they come back and say that, you know, you have an underserved community to the level of, you know, 25-30%, and that yes, you highly should consider this because the incumbents aren't going to bring those services to those communities, then that's a little different proposition.
If they only have money to do certain amount of investigation, they're going to have crappy results.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Mike, but we don't know what they're going to price this thing at. We don't know what their methodology is yet. We're asking them
you've got some ideas. It was $60 in Lake Oswego per month with a 35% minimum coverage. That was the contract.
Okay.
So that's a good ballpark.
Okay.
We know that.
Okay.
Right? You agree?
Why?
Don't just agree with me. Do you agree with that?
That $60 a month for high-speed internet is a good price at a 30% population take rate. Is that what you're saying?
35%. It's Lake Oswego's contract.
But 35%, only 35% of the city would be interested in buying it.
Coverage. No. They had a minimum coverage.
Defined coverage. Because my understanding was they were going to install it everywhere in the city. It wasn't going to be by
take rate. Are you talking about Google or are you talking about a survey?
Talking about the fiber for Lake Oswego. The proposal that they had on the table that they voted on, and now they've re-voted. So it's sort of in limbo. Mm-hmm. The provider they picked, they had to guarantee, Lake Oswego had to guarantee 35% coverage.
And 35% geographic coverage or 35% take-up by population?
If there were,
If
there were 40,000 units, they had to get 35% of 40,000.
Gotcha.
Okay. To order the service. Yeah.
To break even and make it go.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Take rate.
Take rate. Okay. Yeah.
So you're lucky, and it was $60 a month was the fare to get this, and the deal was Lake Oswego City would have to kick in the difference if it fell under 35%.
Sure, but we're not at that point. Go ahead.
No, I know we're not at that point yet, but we have some parameters that we can grab onto.
Sure.
My issue here is I would like to see as good a job as possible.
Sure.
And I just don't, what you're asking for is great. I just don't see it as a possibility for 200 man hours, 300 man hours of work. I mean, if Hillsborough spent 40 grand, I don't think it matters that they had a few more living units than we do.
Are you saying that if Hillsborough spent 40 grand, they probably wasted their money on that survey, pretty much?
I'm looking at deliberate results and I'm looking at required research.
Right.
And I guess I don't see a good enough job with the amount of projected hours. We can back in pretty closely how many hours those guys are going to spend.
Right, but it's not going to be a direct thing. I've worked in consulting, IT consulting, in small and medium-sized businesses. Just because their rate is $125, $200 an hour, their probably break-even rate is, $50, $60 an hour. They're not going to potentially build full boat for a fixed-fee project. They're probably going to be prepared to eat some of that in that $125 an hour, $150 an hour, $200 an hour as part of the overall project. So just doing it dollars and cents, hours and I don't think we're going to be getting it.
Take $100 an hour at 20 grand is $200. Yeah. You're not going to get what we need from this in 200 hours. And so now we've got something that's, we can't really hang our hat because it's not empirically sound. What are we going to do next? Do another?
Spend the 200 grand. Because we think maybe there's something there. I mean, that's what I've heard. I don't know if that's...
I'd like to see, before we disband as a group, I'd like to see us recommend that.
Right.
Because, you know, the city council is going to hear what they hear, and if they're not going to listen to these tapes, I can assure you of that.
Right. So I think what I'm hearing is, you know, do we think we're in trouble for what we would put as the standard for what the scope of this, I mean, and presumably the RFP would allow for that bigger expense and a more thorough study. And should we be raising our expectations? And one of the things we're working on with the council or whomever is to say, hey, you know, this is not a $25,000 project, this is a $40,000 project or a $50,000, and that will save us, you know, $100,000 on the $200,000 deal. And, but we have to kind of all be, you know, at the table here and say, part of it is it generally something that passes the sniff test? You know, LO, $60, 35% take. Sandy, Hillsborough's a no. You know, does this even kind of make sense to where we're kind of rolling the dice a little and say, we want to spend a little extra money because I think we're going to want that come January or February.
So, the thing to look at in these kind of studies is basically, can you band your results, right? So let's say, take your example, at $60 a month at 35% take up, right? And there's some, so let's say $10 million investment. right? And there's some recurring revenue stream. That's how they'd associate with. So the what the survey is going to look for is, okay, so you say, okay, how much, the most amount of money you will pay for a fiber, right? What's the answer? Is there a right answer? No, it varies from people to people. It depends upon how they use it.
What
right?
The market will bear.
Yeah. So they say at $60, this is the revenue stream. At $70, this is the revenue stream. At $80, this is the revenue stream.
That's today.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's today. Today. Right. Yep.
In 5 years,
right.
Something else may come in at $30 a day. That's going to provide the same speed at $30.
But you cannot answer that with certainty, right?
Not with certainty, but with a high level of confidence, I can.
Well, no, because the technology changes so fast.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But isn't that part of the scope of from an experienced company to provide alternatives? They should know what there is now, what may be coming, and what could be coming beyond that. And they have certain levels of understanding of that, and they would... Theoretically, they would include that in their response.
So it says, you know, here,
if you did fiber to the house, and you're set up for the next 15 years.
You know this from your NEC and your semiconductor days. You don't see all those
results. Market trends that may impact sustainability 5 to 10 years into the future.
Well, I mean, you see some based on what's going on behind the scenes. You know what you guys do in the labs and all that stuff.
See, there's the research and there's stuff on the ground. There's a huge difference between the two, right? So like today. Comcast is testing almost 400 Mbps on a coaxial cable.
Thank you. Right. Right. As a matter of fact, I've heard publicly that Comcast in, I think, October, December, will be releasing in this market gigabit to the home over coax.
Yeah. Well, but it's actually only 400 Mbps. It's not true gigabit, but they're calling it that.
Okay.
So I wonder why.
So it's a good $10,000 investment because now we got them worried.
Well,
another behind the scenes consideration of what we're doing here.
Yeah. And that's what it makes sense, right? It's like, okay, so we do this. I call it a first order study. It doesn't even make sense. If it doesn't make sense, then we don't have to spend all this money. If it makes sense, then they go back, and then when they ask for the bids, those people will do all those analysis. Because now we are talking about real hard numbers of building a network, right?
Right. I tend to agree with you in that. So what I'm hearing is, if I'm understanding this correctly, is this feasibility study isn't, the end result of this study isn't a go, no-go decision. It's a, as you just mentioned, a first study without spending a ton of city dollars to figure out if it makes sense to go forward. So you're going to get you're probably not going to get the level of survey that you expect. You're not going to get the level of engineering analysis. You're not going to get the level of different sections, but you're going to get enough that at the end of that, you're going to have a sense of whether or not it makes sense to do whatever the next step is. Based on their recommendation, and you'll get a whole bunch of people much more educated about this during the process, namely our group, right? And so if that's the goal, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with knowing that it's not going to be, to your point, Mike, I'm okay with that, going in knowing that. I'm okay with that.
I think the council needs to know that.
And I agree with you. Yep. As long as we have that in writing.
So the council has fully reviewed this and gave me all of their feedback. So before this even got published, the council reviewed it and provided additional input into it.
Yeah, but they're not having this discussion.
They're saying this is
awesome. we're going to get all this stuff for a go, no-go decision. They're kind of sort of thinking. Or we don't know.
Okay, let me take a note.
What's the council's expectation?
Yeah.
As the result of this, do you know? Did they actually put it down on paper or anything? We expect to learn X, Y, Z from this.
Yes.
1.4.1.
This is what I think. To be honest with you, RFP's responses are due next Friday, correct?
The 19th.
The 19th. So that's a week from Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we go through the process, just continue the process. We are going to have the opportunity during this selection and interview process to raise any flags if we think there are flags We can even ask these vendors what the expectations are, what they think they are. What are typical next steps after a project like this, so that we feel more comfortable about it before we even select the vendor. We as a group could say, you know what? After after listening to these companies, we don't think it makes sense to even spend the $25,000. Or we think it makes sense to have us as a group go to the next council meeting and explain to them, we recommend you move forward, but we want to make sure you understand what we're going to get. So I think
we recommend
that,
the next step is a $200,000 nut, not an 18 to 25.
Or whatever.
Right.
So, and I think we'll better understand that and know that 3 or 4 weeks from now.
I agree. As long as we put something in writing that clarifies exactly what you said and how you feel, so that when the council on January 9th presentation the results of this feasibility study, the feasibility study was done in a very cheap, narrow way. Okay, it's not let's get a vendor and build this thing.
Right.
Now we have to do an in-depth study and spend X amount to really flesh it out.
Right.
Well, and the one way to look at it, if that feasibility study is good or not, if you can get the commercial entities show interest in building this network and running it for us, then you know you have a winner. If nobody shows any interest in building a network, right, if the city is the only entity that's interested in building this network, then we know we don't have a winner.
I understand what you're saying, but yes. I don't completely agree They have a limitation on how much capital and where they spend it. You know, when I look at Google, the Google model
objectives.
Sounds pretty exciting as a consumer, mm-hmm. but they've got 10,000 cities that would love to have them there.
Right.
And they're 2 years talking about this in Portland and Lake Oswego and Tigard or somewhere.
Right.
And there's a lot of other considerations in mm-hmm. there. So I think that, I said this a moment ago, I think that it has some validity, is that even by us opening this door, we may increase the profile of the community such that there is a competitive response, even though we're not competing.
Right.
And that's still good. That potentially could be very good for the city as well.
Yeah. So Google, for example, doesn't run their fiber for a profit. They run fiber as a test lab. It's a cost center. It's not a profit center.
So it's almost like a marketing expense.
Yes. So,
in theory, the city doesn't have to run it at a profit either.
No, well, right? Well, they do.
But
right?
not hopefully not as a Tesla.
That's
in my kitchen over there.
They have to run at least some kind of on a sustainable way, right? They have to be revenue stream.
Right.
So,
of course.
So that's how I look at it. So this is like a quick look research that the NSF funds. They give you $20,000 to really explore your problem, and if you can write a detailed proposal, then they give you a $500,000 grant to do your research. So this is how I'm looking at it.
I'll tell you what, if we went ahead, I put a bid in to install it if I got the same contract that Lake Oswego got.
Well,
okay.
I mean, seriously, it's profitable.
Okay. So
they're contractors. I took a look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I put
two cents here are that I've asked a fundamental question about why we even thought of doing something like this. So he said it's come from Councillor Thomas Frank. So it may very well be the problem in his neighborhood that triggered all these things. Whatever it is, I think at this point you already issued an RFP. I think the first question when you look at the response from RFP is, is it even worth, based on studying after looking at the responses, maybe the first question to answer is it worth considering awarding anything to anyone?
Right.
Or would you just stop there? Because we don't have a good case.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's completely reasonable. I'm putting your note down as an action item.
Looking just to get the best response we can,
mm-hmm.
and this is how we evaluate it. Yeah,
cool. We're trying for a warm fuzzy whether we can do this or not.
Yeah, I think getting everybody on the same page and understanding what we're trying to accomplish, I mean, that's step one. That's why I wanted to have tonight be duke them out, let's figure it out, and so I'll make sure we're rowing the same direction. So anything else in that page there, 141 or 142, that's we need to hash out?
So I need to apologize. I need to roll in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
I kind of been anxious about 1-6, and we've talked about this briefly, which is the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, holy cow, it's a quick timeline for us, as well as for the contract itself. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
So your expectation is the RFPs are all in a week from Friday.
Correct.
And you're giving an award 2 weeks later.
Yeah, so on August 30th, we need to interview the folks that we want to interview on August 30th. And then coming out of those interviews, we should be able to make a decision on whether we hire somebody or who the top performer is for that. And then what we do at that point is go into contract negotiations, meaning here's what you provided us, here's our form contract. If you want to sign it as is, great, we'll get you going. But if you, need to haggle over terms, we're going to give you a very short window to haggle over terms, because some companies will stretch out a contract negotiation for months if they can, for whatever reason. So
these interview happen during business hours on 30th?
Well, we need to make a decision as a group.
Okay.
Do we want them to happen in the evening? Because for the cost of this study, I think we certainly have the flexibility to ask for the vendors to do a call, be on site, whatever method they want to conduct their interview in, to fit our needs. Made it clear, I think, in this document that there will be a task force overseeing their work, so they should be prepared for that.
No, they should do whatever we want them to do.
Well, we are the customer.
Exactly.
Right.
They'll do whatever we want. If we want them to show up at 7 o'clock on
the
night.
Okay. So you get all the a week from Friday the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
You get all of the submissions.
Mm-hmm.
You send those to us that Friday.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then we have
1 week.
X amount of time to read through those.
Okay.
And then we independently evaluate them, and then we meet as a group to talk through them.
So what I was hoping was is we would have a next week try to finalize our grading sheet, how we're going to evaluate them, what are the points and subpoints. So we've got these four areas, and then Mike brought that one up that fit one of these, and that is the the statistically valuable.
So next week we meet and finalize the 8th. That's the 16th.
Correct. Try to go through and finalize the grading structure.
We finalize the grading structure. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so then on the 19th, the Friday the 19th,
mm-hmm.
the proposals arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Then what's the next thing after that?
We need to apply our grading to them.
Okay. We need to do as a group,
we meet on the 23rd.
So what I was thinking on the grading, we do that remotely where you guys apply your grading to them, send the sheets in, and then the next meeting that we set, I have the materials already aggregated into one document for us to look at the responses or the grading, how each person graded each of the RFPs.
Okay, so on the 23rd we meet and we basically select finalists.
Let's see.
No, you can't go that fast.
I'm just trying to get
right.
So we get the proposals on a Friday, and then by over the weekend or whatever, we read through and give you our grades, so that on that by that Tuesday night, the 23rd,
so,
we need to select finalists. Is that what you
mean? So, so we get them. Okay, so.
Do you know how many proposals you will get?
So, I believe I'll have to go back and log in and look, but I think we've got between 15 and 20 people who have downloaded the RFP.
Okay.
Now, we won't necessarily get all of those back.
So it will be a handful. It will be 10.
Between 5 and 10 is what I'm estimating is probably a legitimate amount. So, as a group, we can divide and conquer, or we can slug through all of them. Depends on how we want to approach them.
But the idea would be an outcome of that Tuesday, the 20th, so 2 weeks from today, we would meet and select finalists so that you could then start to schedule interviews with them for the following week.
So, yes.
On the 30th, and then we interview everyone, and then that, and we select the winner.
Correct.
And then
gets announced that week on that Friday.
Or we announce they're all losers.
Or we announce they're all losers.
Well, that's yeah. option.
Or all wins.
Option B. Right. Then we got a problem.
So I
$2,000
each. So let's talk. So let's talk about if we need to adjust the time period. That is something we can do on the RFP that shouldn't compromise the responses, as long as we hold them to the 19th. They need to deliver the responses to us on the 19th. Yeah. So if we feel we need more time for consideration of the responses, we can certainly make those corrections.
Why don't we see what we get?
Yeah.
And then we can have a email conference call and decide.
Right. I mean, it works for me. I mean, are you guys comfortable with that?
Yes.
So next meeting, we can be more detailed about our next meeting clip.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Well, we can work on the grading criteria and, you know, set some more.
So Shane,
yes.
Just so you know, I'll be out of country from August 25th till September 11th.
Okay. Will you?
I don't know how you want me to handle that, but I just want to let you know that.
So,
cancel your trip.
Call in. You got a bridge. You got a bridge. Depends what country you're in.
Don't fly Delta.
So, like I said, I'm planning on having the bridge up for our calls. That way, if folks can't physically make it, they can still dial in and participate. You're welcome to do that if you like. I know there's an expense associated with the foreign calling if you don't want to do that. I'm trying to make it so that we can share materials over email as much as possible. I was hoping that we could do this less old school and more modern. You know, by doing more work at home and sharing it and getting together when we feel like we've got enough materials to talk. Because you guys are all very busy people, and I want to make sure that we're doing this in such a way that it works best.
But then we miss all this spirited discussion.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take that away from us. Yeah. But you know, we shouldn't meet for the sake of meeting. You know.
Don't you know how to use an exclamation point in your emails?
So it sounds like you might not be able to participate in the interview process. Yeah. Is that a concern? Do you want to participate in that interview process?
Well, certainly you don't want to change the date just for me.
Well, it sounds
available. I'll participate. If I'm not available, I'm sure you have better minds than me to take care. So don't worry about that.
Well, it sounds like there's concern around the amount of time to deliver on some of these things. So I'm open to changing the timeline if we need to.
I actually feel okay with personally with. If you think that we're going to get, let's say we get under 10 proposals, mm-hmm. I honestly feel like the evaluation criteria, you don't have to like, I feel like we should be able to meet as a group basically and try to winnow down to that 23rd date. I feel okay about that. Where I have a challenge with is then that following week, 8:30, you want to arrange for interviews and basically make a decision. I think as a group, we're a pretty busy set of folks, so I just think that's a lot to get done in 1 week.
Okay.
So it all depends on how many firms you want to interview.
Sure.
I actually would rather not interview 5 or 6 firms because that's, to me, 5 or 6 hours for if it's a 30... I mean, I don't know how long an interview takes, but I'm assuming it's going to take about an hour per company, maybe a half an hour if we're really
diligent.
So that's the one piece that feels a little bit
okay. That
feels particularly tight to me. It seems not like you've thought it feels like a tight timeline as well.
It does.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, whether I'm there or not, I think just that a couple of weeks to make a decision based on the response you're going to get with. I just said, looking at everyone's schedule and doing a thorough job, it's a Himalayan task.
Okay. So then what we're talking about, the suggestions we're talking about here are moving the respondent interviews from August 30th to 2 additional weeks later. Is that the starting point?
No, I'll do the interview at the same time, just delay the decision.
Right. So we wanted to say delay the award announcement. Yeah. That's what we
might
to
decide after the interview, Shane, that we have follow-on questions. And we want to then, after we talk up, after we sort of debrief, we then send them a list of questions. We might decide after we talk to them that we want to call references. We, There may be a we may decide that after we interview the top two, we didn't like either one, and we say, you know what, let's pick the third one that was on the list. So,
but those big decisions that based on data we learn, we can adjust the schedule. But I think in terms of upfront, I'd like just to see the September 2nd move out another week.
Yeah.
You know, and then that gives us that room to be the committee, basically.
I would say, in my experience, maybe 20% of the RFPs that I respond to stick to their timeline. So I don't think these vendors aren't expecting us to stick to this timeline.
So I think, like I said, the only sticking point I think we had to be careful of is that 19th submission date.
Right.
And we change that submission date from the 19th, then we run into potential challenges with.
I don't think anyone's suggesting that.
No, agreed. I just want to make sure we're all comfortable that introduces risk to vendors, you know, calling out that we didn't operate a fair process.
And this, so the award announcement. So this isn't going to go to council. Then this is just going to be, we're going to make a recommendation, and then it's going to be signed off by the city manager then? Is that what?
So signing authority within the organization, anything under $100,000 a city manager can sign off on. Anything $25,000 or less, I can sign off on. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I have a question about Lake Oswego. So who is building their network?
Well, nobody yet.
Nobody yet.
Oh, okay. But who offered to build it?
Who's the contract
it's
between?
It's a new name company, and I can't.
Okay.
BARN or something like that. I can't even tell you what it is.
And I guess since we've now gone sideways, there is $60 a month. Actually, seems high to me.
No, probably not
for a 35% take up, but I think in the big scheme of things, that sounds high to me.
Because the Comcast basic service is like $60 in town.
We have to look at. They're, I think, 2,500 units. Let's say it's 3,000 living units out of about 27,000 living units are underground. The rest is above.
Okay.
So, you know, are you going to bury? That gets expensive to bury it versus, you know, running it above. I don't know. They were going to go ahead with it because the Sandy manager became the Lake Oswego city manager. Yeah. And now they're, I think it's up on the ballot for November.
Oh, who's the city manager? Is it Jesse?
I can't think of his name. So real quickly, we're kind of getting off track here. So we've kind of gone through the schedule, the scope of work. What I wanted to quickly touch on for our next meeting is the grading criteria, and that is those four categories, and then the subcategory that we want to use as part of the grading.
What's the number on that?
Section 4, evaluation selection proposal. It's bullet point, or it's point 4.2. So what I would like is if anybody has time ahead of time to produce a list of sub-criteria, you know, for project understanding, organization qualification, project management approach, and bring those to the next conversation. We'll spend the next conversation trying to hammer out the criteria we want to use for grading those RF.
What do you mean by compensation schedule?
So some vendor will produce a compensation schedule that shows, you know, how many hours of project management, how many hours of research, how many hours of document creation, printing, reproduction expense, things like that.
Okay.
Some I've looked at proposals from companies. They come in with you know, more project management hours than the other three bidders by a ton. And then you have to think to yourself,
why?
why does it take so much time for that company to manage their own people? Why should we be paying for an inefficient operation? So that's what we kind of mean by compensation schedules. How are they breaking out? And we may decide, wow, you're only going to put 30 man hours to learning about who Westland is, but you're going to spend, you know, 200 hours doing something else that we
don't. Oh, so that's the distribution of labor. Okay.
Right. Effectively, where are they going to be putting their time?
It's not the price level. It's where it's going.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Okay. It's, yeah.
Maybe
I mean,
both.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah.
Where did the results come in under those four bullet points. You know, organization qualifications, mm-hmm. I'm going to assume, mm-hmm. hey, my company did these same things in 17 northern cities. Mm-hmm. That's a hell of a good
batting average.
That's a good batting Thank average. You. Take care. Project management approach. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at where do they come up with the projected, where is the projected revenue, expenses, other vendors, other partners, where is that in that four groups? That in project management?
So there's, we got more information.
When you take the 1.42 deal and you throw it in.
So if you look at
results, where did delivered results?
Well, look at section three. Section three has a lot of material around what project understanding means, qualifications, firm qualifications, project manager qualifications. These are the different areas in which help explain or build up to our evaluation criteria. So in their proposal, they need to make sure they're speaking to these points.
So from 3.1. The 3.3 would be under project understanding, then 3.4 through 3.5 would be under organizational qualifications. We already talked about compensation schedule, and we got project management. I'm not sure.
Well, so the 3.3 is the project understanding. The 3.4
right.
is the organizational qualification.
Right.
The 3.5 is the project management approach. And the 3.7 is the cost schedule. So that's the compensation schedule, even though.
Okay, we're looking, let's go back at delivered results in 1.4.2.
Right.
I'm trying to place the delivered results.
But we won't get the delivered results in the RFP. That will happen at the end of the contract, right?
Correct. So what we have to do is say, okay. Here is your document. Yeah. Here's how we're going to grade the RFP.
Your proposal.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we have to kind of make a decision. Do we think their approach and how we grade it will result in these delivered results?
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So. Sure. I will not be here next week. I'll be out of town on business.
So how do you feel about emailing in some materials?
For the evaluation criteria, mm-hmm. my only input now would be mm-hmm. just to clarify. So if you're actually grading each of the respondents, they can ask for the mm-hmm. for us to give them
the scorecards.
Scorecards,
right.
So will we be doing an initial set of scores for the written proposals in order to narrow down to a list of companies that we want to interview. Mm-hmm. And then after we interview, mm-hmm. we will regrade the ones that we interview mm-hmm. based on the same criteria. So we get a chance to regrade them so that we have basically two sets.
So we can actually change the criteria if we choose for the interview process, for the interview process.
It says here, written proposals and interviews will be evaluated
gotcha.
Based on the following criteria.
Right, right.
So I think we have to have two sets of grades, basically.
Right.
Because in the end, whoever we decide to select,
right.
we need documentation based on the way this is written.
Right. Right.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, as a, mm-hmm. if we get looked back as a team,
sure.
are we doing this according to what's stated in the RFP? We need to do that.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Another question I have, our internal deliberation, once we are reviewing the proposals, are they public or they are not?
So the audio, if we convene a meeting, yes, we will have to open it to the public. We will have to post the audio. So those things, yes, when we do conduct a meeting and discuss potential, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will have to record those
record what? Record what? So every one of these meetings gets put on.
Right. I post the audio, I post meeting minutes, those kinds of things for transparency.
Okay. What was I going to say?
Another question. So this meeting that we are talking today, before the RFP proposals are due, they get posted before the contractor submits an RFP?
This audio is could potentially be listened to by a proposer.
Yeah, anyone can dial into the...
But it's part of the open process.
Well, no, I understand. I'm just trying to understand the process.
Sure.
See, the federal contracts were different. Right.
Yeah, I would think that you wouldn't disclose this type of information until after the contract's awarded. That's how it's typically done when I submit
proposals. So the city manager asked me to make sure I'm following all, even though we're a task force and not a board. Okay. I follow the same processes, rules that effectively a board would, to make sure that we're being transparent to the citizens of the city.
Okay.
So I can inquire about that.
It's just curious to me. Like, I'm not allowed to find out who's selected until it's been awarded.
You can do it on a delayed basis.
I'll ask legal to see how that might work.
I would think that would make sense. There could be a real savvy proposal guy that knows, well, I'm just going to go into their site and listen to the meeting and see what...
Yeah, for example, that wouldn't necessarily be fair when we have a meeting. So we have a meeting and we're evaluating all these different companies based on the written proposals. Mm-hmm. Then we come and we select the vendors. And then now one of those selected vendors listens to that audio before they come in to interview and hear.
We would go into executive
session. That makes no sense.
Yeah, that makes zero sense.
I'm sure they'll, in their responses, they'll also have a non-disclosure to anybody else. If they're a good company, I would think they put in there, you cannot disclose any of our information to any other company.
I have done one something similar for the Portland City, and similar evaluation and selecting a vendor. I don't even remember they even recorded it.
No, this is, I'm surprised at this myself.
So Westland records everything, and it's on the system,
Mm-hmm.
Just log in, you can hear it. And it's nice because I can go to a city council meeting and scan down to the agenda item I want without coming over and sitting there. I can go home and get right there, spend my 10 minutes, and know what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Right. But this is a little bit different when you're in an evaluation.
Well, that's why I say we might, when we do that, go into executive session.
Yeah, so, I think Eileen would be...
This might be a scenario
because this could give an unfair advantage to one of them.
This might be a scenario where I can post instead of the actual audio or the minutes. Must see city recorder for public records request or something like that. You know, at least until we're done with the hiring process process.
Or just delay the posting till after the decision point, where it doesn't matter if they hear it or not.
Okay.
I just think the other piece to this evaluation thing is, if you want us, I'm not sure what next week's meeting. If as you stated, this RFP already describes the specifics behind each of these evaluation criteria, then are we just going to review those items during next week's meeting? Is that the plan?
So what I'm trying to put together is a numeric rating system where we say, okay, under project understanding, we have these five kind of sub items that we're looking for, and we can apply a 1 through 10, a 1 through 5, and then I can put together a weighted average.
Got it.
What I'm trying to do is take a subjective process and make it a little more objective. That way, if there is concern that someone didn't get a fair shake, we can go back and say, well, yeah, we did apply a numeric rating to it. And so that's what I'm hoping we can next week hammer out, is what those sub items are.
So then can you come to that meeting then
with recommendations?
I
will try to put
a straw man. This is what I think, because otherwise I think it'll take a long time to go.
Sure. Yeah, I was planning on coming with something prepared, even if it wasn't perfect. And if you guys have things you want to send to me or add in, you guys have my email account and send them over. And what I'll do is, there is no wrong answer. I'll throw them in, and then we can kind of hash them out at the next conversation, so we can kind of get that dialed in.
Yeah, so theoretically, we could break... Go ahead, you're talking.
The only thing it will be nice for me to get personally is the Sandy's report, if you can have access to them.
I don't know if Sandy did a feasibility study.
I would like Hillsborough's report.
Or Hillsborough, one of those things,
So are you wanting...
what I'm looking for.
Here's what you want to do.
Or a link
look on the city of Hillsborough.
Well, are you guys wanting the results of the study, or are you wanting the feasibility RFP from Hillsborough?
I'm interested in seeing the deliverables, the study deliverables,
I have them.
So that we can
Now, bear in mind,
then we'll have a better sense for what these firms are.
So I do want to point out that that may influence our decision, because the company that Hillsborough used did sign up to bid ours.
No, it won't influence. It just adds,
okay. I'm just disclosure here.
It's available.
It's either going to,
isn't it?
It's either going to help or hurt.
I think you
company.
Have to request it from the city. I don't think they've got it posted necessarily.
But
okay. Yeah.
I don't see any issue with that. It's either going to help or hurt them based on how good that we each individually look at their work. So
I can check my bias.
For me, that is important, because then I have a better sense for what these studies are. I would be able to ask better questions during an interview process.
So when
I had something to base it on,
when I went through theirs as part of my education for this, I was impressed. Maybe strong language, but they did a really good job of all the things you guys are bringing up in the room. They did a really good job of talking to those things at a level that I think fits what we're all talking about here. You know, this isn't the big show. We know that if we try to go forward, there's a $250,000 design study we want to do. So again, I felt that what they produced really hit, I think, what we're looking for as an organization. So,
okay.
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to keep from tainting our opinions on things or swaying. Yeah.
Or just Google on Google, point to point. Google point to point.
No.
We'll see what's coming.
Okay.
If that's a concern, another thing you could do is you have a section here, which I haven't read. Mm-hmm. Section 3.6, additional information. Mm-hmm. Does that encourage them to submit samples of similar work?
So the idea behind was, is there something that your company has done, does do, or is a differentiator from your competition that we should consider you, you know, over the competition, you know, and something like that could be as simple as, we did the feasibility study for Lake Oswego. We did the feasibility study for Clackamas County, which, you know.
So we could always, you know, in order to quote unquote level the playing field, if as part of, if you send us this Hillsborough study, let's say that we pick two firms to interview. One is the same firm one is another firm. We could ask that firm prior to the interview, hey, you told us in your thing that you did a study for this city. We could either ask that city for their study or ask the firm to send it to us so we could look at that as well.
One thing I might do is look at redacting the company name if I can from their materials.
Yeah.
If it's it's a very large presentation. It's several pages. So if I can successfully redact the name of the company out of it, that might keep it.
I
would guess they're going to put it in their response to
they might.
We did the city of Hillsborough. I mean that might be reserved.
Right.
Or we might see the paragraphs to be identical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boilerplate.
Everyone uses a boilerplate for all the standard stuff.
Is the greatest thing in the world.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
just ask your attorney. They get paid a lot for copy paste.
Yeah. All right, so I will get something out to you guys on that materials you guys have requested. Put together a kind of a first draft of some possible criteria for grading, and then we'll meet next week to discuss that. In the time, I'll ask the city attorney tomorrow to make sure that changing the dates in this to give us more time to consider post interview isn't going to create any kind of issue. I'll make sure we get that accomplished. And so then I had other business and adjournment on the agenda. Did anybody have any other business they want to bring up or discuss?
I recommend that we appoint Dean Sir left to the committee, since he shows us
the interest. I'll need to. He wanted to test drive to see if he was going to be able to have the time resources to, you know, participate in this. I will follow up with him to see if, you know, he can make that happen. I think we have. I don't think Kazi got appointed last council meeting. I'm sure you did. I'm not sure Kazi.
No, you did. He did last night.
He did, but
Kazi and Troy didn't.
Kazi,
they
did, Troy,
they
and
just,
Dean.
They just did them last night.
So Kazi, Troy, and Dean are the folks who I'm informing them, keeping them involved, sending them the same materials, because the understanding is that the council's going to appoint them at some point. Interestingly enough, the council had taken the appointments off the agenda last night, but yet they still did them anyways, which Otherwise, I would have been at the meeting to, yeah.
So. Well, I was there. I watched it all.
Okay.
Until the closing.
So,
are we done, Shane?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure there isn't any other business to discuss, and then we can adjourn the meeting.
And what time is next week's meeting?
Same time, 6:30. Is that going to work for everybody?
Yep, works for me.
Minus Brian.
Okay.
Would that be successful for you?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for dialing in. I appreciate having you on the call. Everything that everybody's added, it's much appreciated. I think we got a strong team here.
Great. All right, thank you.
A good experience.
All right.
Good
evening, guys. You have a good evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Shane.
Thanks.
Shane, thanks for your job. Nice job. Thank you.